Hello and welcome to Down the Slope. Thanks for choosing to listen along tonight. By choosing to listen tonight, you have chose the Scottish Cup final, chose European football, chose 7-0, 6-2, natural order, chose not being a yo-yo club, chose Edinburgh's Premier side, chose Kevin Nisbet, Martin Boyle and Christian Deutsch, chose Jack Ross, chose Hibernian fucking football club. Let's go! And as ever, I'm joined by Greg, Liam, Harry. How we doing, lads? Finally sort of come back to life after a rough Sunday after Saturday?
I'll let Liam answer that question first.
I'm back in the land of the living today, sort of. But yeah, yesterday was a beer with a sore head, I think, yesterday is how I best describe myself.
So, well, me and Greg, actually, we got out to play golf yesterday, and that was, tell you what, that was even more a fucking roller coaster than watching Hibs on Saturday. I don't know, for anyone that listens to golf, I was 5 up with 6 holes to play, and we drew. So I royally fucked it at the end, and I had to make a putt on the last hole to actually half the match. So I absolutely chucked it. But
Hibs did not chuck it. He fucked it, and it wasn't me playing some nice stuff. Very big.
And well, today you're listening to Down the Hole, our new golf podcast.
Funny, we actually, just as we finished up as well, we bumped into John from Long Bangers as well. He was like 3 or 4 holes behind us because he plays at the same golf club as me. But anyway, Hibs did not fuck it. Hibs did play some lovely stuff. Harry, talk to me. Let's go.
Like, as I said last week, getting beat up St Johnstone, not a big game at all, because that was the biggest game, as you said, that's probably our biggest game since the final in 2016, and we absolutely done everything right. I think that it's funny because in the first half, we tweeted it out, that's probably the worst we've performed in the first half of any of the three finals, or semi-finals, sorry, but obviously we took our chance when it came in the first half. I think Jackson Irvine, everybody that's like, oh, what does Jackson Irvine bring to the team? He sets up chances like that every game, and finally someone's fucking taken one. Brilliant touch and finish from, or just, yeah, all around great goal. Beautiful knee slide from Nisbet as well. But yeah, there was no point in the game where I thought, oh no, they're going to score. I think Dundee United looked very poor, as much as we looked pretty decent. I don't think that we really came out of second gear. I just thought we looked comfortable the whole game. I think Jack Ross picked the right team. And Melker Hallberg walked up to me and smacked me in the face and said, stop fucking criticising me, I'm class, and I'm happy to take that.
And Liam, you look a bit like Melker Hallberg, so what was it like to play like that on Saturday?
I just wish that I had an ounce of the ability that he's got in that right foot in the entirety of my body, because Saturday, he was just brilliant on Saturday. He was the guy that really early on in his Hibs career, when we played against Aberdeen and Motherwell, I think we beat Motherwell 3-1, I think that would be one of his first games, yeah. And we beat Aberdeen, you know, Easter Road. I think I came away from those games thinking that we had unearthed a gem, and it's not really worked out for him since then. I think there's a variety of different reasons why that's been the case. He's maybe been kind of a square peg in a round hole at times in his career. He even got shunted out to right back in the League Cup earlier on this season for 60 minutes. So, you know, I don't think we've necessarily seen the best of him, but his instinct is always to play the ball forward, and sometimes it doesn't come off for him, but he also has the instinct to go and get in the box. He's a very different type of player to Gogic, but I thought he came in and did exactly what I suspect was asked of him Saturday. And the other thing I just want to say about his performance, whilst he did his right foot with a wand, just his set-piece delivery was a massive improvement on the set-piece delivery we've had in recent weeks. And that's not a criticism of the other players, but I just think he's a more natural set-piece taker. Anyway, that's all I'll say about Melker Hallberg for the rest of the podcast.
Wrong, he's getting
involved
in this
7 times,
isn't he?
Aye, so Greg, obviously, I think Dundee United started the game fairly strongly. They obviously had the sort of Shankland's pass and then the header that went over the bar. But how did you make of the game? How we started the game?
I think it was probably not far off that we didn't start it. It was probably the worst we played in the three semi-finals that we've had. But look, you know, we scored, we took our chances. I thought Hallberg and Newell in the midfield were excellent. We had good width. With Boyle, not so much with Irvine, but he was coming inside, and that really paid dividend for the first goal, where he came inside, he's picked up the loose ball off the header, and Nisbet's run from deep, and he's taken it in his stride and slotted it in. I didn't actually think we were in danger at any point in the game. I thought it was one of them that they could have been there till tomorrow night and still not scored. So yeah, all round a good performance and definitely something to build on.
I mean, I've been quite subdued in the opening 5 minutes here. Harry, we're in a fucking Scottish Cup final.
I didn't like being the first one to be asked, because I didn't care where to start, because I started when he I think one person I'm going to mention it early, because I always forget to mention him when he's played well. I thought Paul Hanlon was fucking stupendous. I think that's probably his best game of the season. I think he's the primary reason why every time they went forward they couldn't do anything. He gets blamed for his physicality, but Shanklin looked feared of him by the end of the game. I think that Paul Hanlon, like, I've criticised him before. Greg's definitely criticised him before. But I think he deserves a world load of praise after that, because I think that that's the exact kind of leader we needed on the pitch. Because, like, even in the other semis, like, with the set pieces and that we conceded against St Johnstone, it was just missing that leadership on the pitch. We've been crying out for it all season. The fact that Paul Hanlon stepped up in a game where, if we'd lost that, then I think the wheels would have fell off and everybody would have been in turmoil. So the fact that we've actually had him grab the team by the scruff of the neck, I felt, defensively anyway, and led them on, I thought was brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, like, Paul Hanlon, again, like you say, he has had weak points in the season, but for me, he's probably behind Nisbet and Boyle, maybe Josh Doig, probably played the season for me. Like, really, I think most consistent across the... I think Joe Newell gets a lot of praise, and he's been good again this season, but he has gone quiet at periods in the season. For me, Hanlon's been superb all season long, really, again, minus one or two weak points. And even like when you reference this other semi-finals, it wasn't like it was him that was losing his man or anything like that. Like, he's been pretty consistent. Liam, in the first half especially, obviously, I think we sort of grew into the game, and then in the lead up to the first goal, Nisbet just had a chance, and I think it was the first time that Boyle really sort of got at the fullback. Did you think we were more than worthy of the win and going in at half time, one if not more?
Not just. I thought we were the better team in the first half. I don't think there was lots in it. Mickey Mellon said he thought Dundee United really improved the second half, but I thought we were comfortably the better side in the second half as the game opened up. But no, the first half, I thought we definitely deserved to be one up. I felt like Martin Boyle had a bit of a tendency to kind of, instead of go to the byline, he was sort of checking back, and he was looking for that inside ball a lot. And I wondered if that was instruction, because it seemed quite obvious he was going to do that a lot of the time. And he didn't have the underlap or overlap from McGinn, I noticed, which has been quite a common theme this season. So he was kind of out there on his own on the right-hand side doing it. But that ball inside, as we saw eventually, it did start to pay dividends for us. But I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure what that was all about, really, in the first half, to be honest.
Greg, just for what Liam has said then, I know Harry mentioned it to us at the weekend, any sort of play that Dundee United had came down our left side because George Doig was so far pushed up. Do you think there was maybe an impact of maybe the instruction was for Paul McGinn not to overlap as much so that we weren't left overly exposed? Because Dundee United were keeping the three attacking players pretty high up throughout the game. And do you think that's maybe slowed Boyle down to an extent in the first half?
Yeah, I think certainly when we're defending, it was maybe more of a 3-5-2, whereas McGinn would tuck in and the other two would still play as centre-half. So, yeah, I mean, look, definitely an area that Dundee United looked to exploit. And behind Doig, he was very advanced. But do you know what? I don't mind that. You know, if you're pushing boys forward, you know, there's not really a left midfielder in the starting 11. So why not push him forward? You know, why not get him up there? We're so comfortable playing the 3-5-2 anyway. I just think that I don't really know what game Mickey Mellon was actually watching, to be fair. I think Dundee United maybe had a spell the first 10 minutes in the second half, and then they fizzled out. But teams are always going to have a spell. It doesn't mean that you've necessarily played well. It's just that you didn't actually sit in to defend the lead. And then, I mean, I will come on it, but the football for the second goal was incredible. Yeah, and it was exactly what we wanted to see.
What annoyed me just a wee bit about Mickey Mellon's comments post the game is he seemed to think the whole game hinged on the second goal.
Yeah.
Like that was the reason they didn't win the game. But I think Mickey Mellon needs to go back and check the scoreline, because his team failed to score in 90 minutes. And to be honest, it didn't even really look like scoring. Macy had one clever save down to his near post, but it wasn't an outstanding save. And I would say the thing with that is you just completely miss the fact that Bobby Madden balls up playing that, failing to play the advantage when we were through on goal. And so that would have been the second goal anyway.
I think when you compare, I've got, of course, on the back of both things you said there, when you compare the Martin Boyle fault that you're talking about before Doidge, not a disallowed goal, but just didn't get the chance to officially score the goal, when you compare that to Nick Walsh in Old Firm last weekend, where he's not only has he delayed us ending off, he's allowed the play to go on. The Rangers have scored against Celtic at that point and still went back and booked the player on ultimately sent Callum McGregor off. And of course, that doesn't get referenced, nor does Mickey Mellon reference the fact that they only got through to the quarterfinals because Nicky Clark committed GBH on a part at Thistle centre half in the 92nd minute. But no, none of that matters. And they hadn't even had a shot on target at the point of our second goal. So let's not get fucking carried away. Just fucking dry your eyes, mate. But just before we got into halftime, Harry, obviously we scored a very, very good goal. It comes through Ryan Portress just fucking shelling it by all accounts. Jackson Irving follows up, wins the second ball. Great pass into Kevin Nisbet. And then does that just show you just now why Kevin Nisbet is streaks ahead of Lauren Shankland and why Kevin Nisbet should be in the Scotland squad in the summer?
I think so. Like, I think it would be quite harsh for Steve Clarke to base it off of one game. But across the whole season, I think that it's fair to say Shankland's just not in a good system for him at all. I don't think that Mickey Mellon's way of football favours strikers. It tends to be very hit them on the break and hope for the best and the ball breaks to you. I think Nisbet, missing him against St Johnstone's kind of emphasised how good he actually is. Because obviously we did go through a good spell of games without him, we were actually getting results. But I just think moving forward, he just links everything up. He just helps bring the midfield into attack. And it's, we just look at like a different side without him. So, yeah, no, I think Nisbet, if Clark's been watching him in the last couple of weeks or last month or so, I don't think there's any reason why he doesn't go to the Euros, especially if he's considering taking Shankland, because he's a much better player this season than Shankland. I can't say he's a better player overall because I didn't watch Shankland when he was in the Championship much. But based off this year, seeing him play against Hibs all season, he's not been very good.
Yeah, and Liam, I guess you're going in at half time, and I think we've all said, I don't think Hibs were fine. We were good in the first half, we controlled the game probably from the sort of 10th minute onwards, but were you sitting at half time thinking that you wanted more from Hibs, or were you like, right, let them come on to us and find the space in behind?
Kind of a mix of both. So I suspected that would force Dundee United to come out a wee bit and that would leave us with some space to mind, but also just wanted to see a wee bit more intensity from Hibs. And I think, in fairness, we got that. Like, the second half, I did feel like we came out and we realised that a 1-0 lead might not be enough. And we did take the game to Dundee United with a simplicity to our play. We weren't making things overly complicated. There was just lots of really short passes and the tempo just lifted a wee bit in the second half. And that was ultimately, I think, kind of what led to the second goal.
Yeah, and Greg, I think at times throughout the season you maybe have been a little bit critical of the team maybe sitting in for the first 10 minutes or half and sort of getting the feelers out and seeing it through any period of time. Was there any point in that 10 minutes where you were worried and thinking, fuck, we actually need to let up it again? And also ultimately we did, and the spaces and we capitalised on that. But were you worried at all in sort of that 10-minute spell after half-time?
Not really. I mean, Dundee United do play quite narrow because they play the three up front, so there is space out wide. I felt as soon as they took Nicky Clark off, the top scorer, they actually improved. They kind of created a couple more chances, but I don't think they really posed us a great threat. I wasn't overly annoyed that we were sitting in. I thought, why don't we sit in? Because, like Liam says, they need to come out, they need to come at us, they need to try and get back in the game because we're nowhere near it. They were miles off it. So I don't mind that. And then we picked them off and, you know, to be honest, it should have been more than two.
Yeah.
Possibly more than three as well. But like, you take the win no matter what it is in a cup semi-final.
Yeah, and Harry, I guess, like, I mean, Greg mentioned it earlier, and for me, that second goal is everything that's good about Hibs. And look, I know Christian Doidge looked offside. See, to be honest, see with VAR, I'm not convinced that his fucking armpit wouldn't have been in line with the fucking other boy's big toe. Like, you know, like, but if it's offside, it's offside. Like, I don't give a flying fuck. The goal stood. Just how good was that goal? Martin Boyle finds himself in a pocket of space, and the front three link up beautifully.
Well, we all love the, as we know, Liam loves a cliche, and we love the passing, moving tempo. That's literally what that was all about. Eh? When, like, the main thing that we need to keep banging on about is how great our strike force has been, the three that are up top, kind of rotating in, and if any goal that the three of them get a touch consecutively is just gorgeous. I think that Doidge, that's probably the most normal goal Doidge has ever scored. Because most of his goals just tend to bounce off him and hit the back of the net. But that one, he took it like a striker and actually tucked it in nicely.
Really, really good finish, isn't it? Really, really good finish.
No, as you say, it's just the type of goals that you love to see. Like when we grow up, we're told that Hibs play all this great football and that's what our families beat into us. And we don't see it too often, but when we do, it's gorgeous, especially when it's at Hampden.
Liam, just let's go back to the Mickey Mellon trend. Well, our front three have scored more goals in all competitions than his entire team have in all competitions. So I think he just needs to suck it up. Would you agree?
I don't know if I can summarise any better than that. I found Mickey Mellon's comments after all the games against us this season just quite bizarre, to be honest. He's really struggled to give us any credit, and I don't know if it's another one of these guys that's just got a bit of distaste for us that lingers, and maybe I'm overthinking it. Maybe he's like that about every game post-match clubs, but I just thought he was really unfair. I thought he could have given us more credit, because I thought the second half, some of the football that we played, I think he should have been walking away from that saying we were lucky to just get beat 2-0. Because if we'd won that 5 or 6, it genuinely would not have been a travesty on the way the second half played out. And that's not Hibs propaganda for me. But I just find like that whole manager after the game, clearly after a semi-final, like, you're going to be frustrated, you're going to be annoyed at the outcome of the game. But just be honest, eh? Like, we all watched it. Like, you know, you're no kidding anyone by trying to pull the wool over people's eyes and say the offside changed the game, because it didn't change the game.
No, absolutely. And Greg, you said you want to talk about more. You brought up earlier, you said last week you want to see Hibs get their foot on the ball, fast, free-flowing football. Yeah. Second goal, wax lyrical.
Oh, well, I think I'm actually surprised you've not asked about Melka Hallberg, because I'm in the Melka Hallberg fan club. I want to remember at this point. I mean, you can look at it many different ways. Even his run, he's run past Boyle. It attracts attention from the defenders, but, you know, it's a neat wee ball around the corner, like Nisbet. It's the wee ball in there. Boyle's waited. Doidge has made the movement, and it's just like a hot knife through butter. That's what we want to see every week. Unfortunately, we can't play six football every week, but this is the sort of stuff that we should be doing. You know, we do it so well. We can... week out when we play that sort of way. Hamilton away, it was the exact same, like back in December. It was just so free flowing, the fluidity. You know, the midfield are moving, changing positions. That's, mate, every man for themselves in that midfield, and the runs, the dummy runs, it's just exquisite. And didn't think Doidge had that sort of finish in his locker, and he's just tucked it in the bottom corner. Goalie's got no chance. And like, I'm a big fan of bare minimum. And you see what it means to the players, and, you know, the celebrations, and everyone's loving it. And you know, Paul Hanlon came out after the game and said that, you know, the celebrations in the chin room are unbelievable. Like, that's what you want to hear. You know, we've got a difficult week last week, but we turned it on at the weekend. And
yeah. Just what you're saying there about bare minimum and players looking excited and celebrating and stuff. Obviously, we've got the ongoing joke about your bed sheet, and
yeah.
I mean, I think Jack Ross is definitely doing a lot to really get you firmly in that.
I think it was the second goal that he really got excited. I seen a smile on his face, and he was jumping about. So yeah, I mean, look, I don't want to tempt fate, but if we win it, I'll happily hang the bed sheets out with Scottish Cup winners 2021. Jack Ross, I love you on them. Double bed sheets, far bigger. But yeah. Like, I hope I'm proved wrong, because I've given him a lot of shit this year. A lot of shit. More than I've probably given any other manager, to be fair, over the course of the season. But, like, if he gets third and wins the Scottish Cup, then shuts me right up, and I'm more than happy with that.
Yeah. And I guess late on in the game, in comparison to maybe last weekend, we brought three players on that I guess probably done their job. When they came on the park, and McGregor, McGuinness, and Jamie Murphy especially, and I guess even just Murphy coming back to injury, the bench looked a lot stronger straight, and obviously Nisbet as well. The bench looked a lot stronger at the weekend there as opposed to last weekend. There was quite a bit of criticism kicking about after the St Johnstone game. Which one of the three, Harry, do you think's maybe done enough to say, if any of them, that they should be in the team or definitely putting themselves in the picture for a starting spot? Let's not even talk about the final yet for maybe the Celtic and Aberdeen game.
Being honest, I don't know how hot a take it is, but I think even in just the one play of the ball, I think that Murphy showed that he's got the most footballing ability at the club. I think that he's just a magnificent player. I think when he's on point, I think that he's nearly unstoppable. If we could actually get him to full fitness without him breaking every 2 weeks, I think that we'd have a hell of a player on our hands. I kind of forgotten how good a player he actually is, but when he takes the ball, he just kind of goes past people. It doesn't really make sense how easily he gets past them. There was one ball. Did he play the ball forward? No, he got the ball played through to him and he nearly scored, and it would have been like a screamer at the end. Like the football was lovely. I think Jamie Murphy's some player when he's on his game. But I don't know if any, I don't know if it's enough to displace anybody else in the team. I think he's quite a player. Like if we can get him back up to full fitness for the final, he'd be a starter for me.
I love Jamie Murphy as an impact sub when there's space out in front of him to run into. I think that's when you see the best of him. And I thought he did get quite a bit of space down that left-hand side because the game had opened up significantly. I think that's typically, I think the Dundee game in the League Cup where he scored and a couple other games like that where the games have opened up, he's looked really good. When the games have been tight, I've not been so convinced by his ability because I think when he's on the left-hand side, you just know what he's going to do every time. He's going to slalom inside you and get it on the right foot. I think good, smart defenders in a game where it's tight and it's compact can defend against that. It's when it's opened up, it's more difficult. The one for me that I'm almost as big a cheerleader as I'm a Halberd, but I really want Kyle McGuinness to come good. And I thought he did quite well when he came on. I know that wasn't necessarily the general consensus, but I actually thought passes went to feet. He got himself in and about it. He was busy. He was closing down. You know, and I just really want it to work out for him as well. So there's a bit of me that's just, you know, an inbuilt cheerleader, I think.
Mm-hmm. No, I think probably all four of us are in that camp when it comes to Kyle McGuinness. And here's the thing, I think initially when he came on, I was sort of looking at him, I was like, I've not really seen him yet, but there was definitely a change of formation when he came on. We went to a flat 4-4-2 and he was out on the left-hand side. And his job was quite frankly to protect Josh Doyle. Like that, you know what I mean, as far as I could see. And like Liam said, he done everything that was asked of him. And a sub that's coming on when you're 2-0 up, and they come on about 70th minute, if he doesn't do anything wrong, then that's fine for me. If you know what I mean, and obviously Jamie Murphy comes on and he's in that more advanced role, and I totally agree with what both of you have said. The way that Jamie Murphy can skip past players with absolutely zero pace is ridiculous.
Mental.
And I think you look at... again, say the Celtic game next weekend, or any game, a game where Hibs can get the first goal and maybe other teams are opening up, then Jamie Murphy's the perfect player to come off the bench. Again, you might not think it, he's not got that Martin Boyle pace, even maybe Dre Wright pace that you think he can stretch the game, but he can, just by beating a player, because you can give him the ball at the halfway line and he has the ability to run with it. Greg, what did you make of Murphy's cameo opinion? Because it felt like he was on for about 50, like ages, but he only came on like the 82nd minute.
I was actually quite surprised to see him initially, and then he came on and when he turned the boy inside it about 3 or 4 times, you know, it's like you say, he doesn't need pace, he's just got the ability that buys him a yard or 2 yards, and like he's a very dangerous player. I don't think he'll do enough to get in the next three squads, but starting 11. But he will be on the bench, and you know, like you say, it's a good option to come off the bench. I thought on Saturday he probably proved a lot of people wrong. You know, I feel like a lot of people are very critical of him purely because he gets injured brushing his teeth. But
do you know what he's like?
He's had a bad injury, and do you know what? You're so susceptible to other injuries when you've had something like that, and that is a danger. But you can't take away from the boy's ability. You cannot. There is no question his ability on the ball.
I think,
I was just going to say, he's like that old guy at fives. Like, you know that guy you play at fives who's like, he's got grey hair, he's like in his 50s, and he's just a cut above the rest. You know, you can just tell he's played at a level that he just sees the game differently. But he can't run. And he can't really strike the ball, but he just moves about the pitch really well, and he makes loads of good shouts and vision. Aye, like that's who he is, but on an 11-a-side pitch.
I think both of the players, in terms of Kyle McGinnis and Jamie Murphy, fall into the same category of, I think Hibs players, Hibs fans are saying, oh, they're injury prone because they've been in and out of the team this year. But I think what you've got to factor in is, I think Jamie Murphy's only ever serious injury he was coming back from when he signed for Hibs. Kyle McGinnis is in the same boat. And I think with the way that we've set up the squad this year, and they are two quality players, that we don't have a massive squad. We've got a lot of good players. And I think we probably, if we had a bigger squad, it would have been easier for them. I think Kyle McGinnis probably came back too quickly back in October time. I think when we signed him, I think he'd only been training for a week and a half at St Mirren, and then he played his first game for us like a week later, like coming back to, was it an ACL he done, I think, back in January last year. So like, both of them have had really bad injuries, and I think a solid, getting some minutes towards the end of this season and a solid pre-season, I think we're going to see two entirely different players next season. They're both obviously under contract for next year, which is a plus. But just to sort of wrap us up on the semi-finals, did you watch the St Johnstone St Mirren game? Obviously, we know what we get with St Johnstone. Did you have a preference going into the game? I think, Harry, you definitely did. I wasn't that arsed personally.
I think for me, if I put myself in the Hibs players' shoes, then you probably want St Johnstone, to be honest. You want to right the wrongs that have gone on this season. You want to go out there and prove a point. I'm all for that. I didn't have a preference. I think we're grown up enough to accept that we need to beat them. It just needs to happen one way or another. We need to beat them. So for me, there was no preference. You know, if you go into the final at St Mirren, possibly the fans will be complacent already, planning parties or whatever. So yeah, I think, you know, you need to take it as it comes. But for me, there should be no preference. We should always back ourselves against who we're playing.
Harry?
Or
Liam, whoever.
I'm going to be honest. See, I would rather have played St Mirren in the final, but it is what it is. St Johnstone did on Sunday what I think they've done well this season, and they got a goal in front, and then they, you know, sat back and soaked up pressure and showed that they're a really organised, defensively well-drilled team. I could probably talk defensive cliches all day about St Johnstone, but that's what they're good at. So, St Johnstone it is.
Just got to beat them, eh? I know, sorry, what Greg said. I watched the, mean Greg, like I said earlier, mean Greg, we were on the golf course, so I didn't watch it live, but I watched the highlights last night. I think it's like extended highlights, and for me, it looked like St Mirren were the better team. And I think from looking back at the semi-final that we played against St Johnstone back in January, and probably all the games we've played against St Johnstone this season, they are the epitome of the team you have to score first against. Like, for me, that's because St Mirren missed chance. Again, just be looking at the highlights, but St Mirren missed chance after chance after chance, and then eventually St Johnstone get the two goals in 4 minutes, and then it's, by all intents and purposes, good night, Vienna. Harry, I think you were probably the most vocal out of the four of us in terms of pretty much definitely wanting to avoid St Johnstone. What was your thinking behind that?
So the Hibs fan of me that wants the easy way in to win the cup obviously wants to win. I think Liam's bang on. I genuinely, hand on heart, whoever scores first in the cup finals won the cup of my eyes. I don't think that either team's got it in them to come back against the other. Every game we've played against St Johnstone's been an absolute bore fest. I also didn't want it for that reason. I think it's going to be a terrible cup final to watch. It's just going to be agony the whole time. I don't think any team's going to take a two-goal advantage at any point. I think it's just going to be gritty, and everybody's going to hate it for 90 minutes until that final whistle is blown. To be fair, it'll probably go extra time and penalties considering how this year's Scottish Cup went. However, the hopeless romantic in me does love a story arc, and we have got the comeback arc. They practice it in the League Cup. So to final the season, all the Hibs fans have been moaning like hell. Ross out every second week, even though we're third in the table. So the perfect story arc is for us to beat. It's part of that whole nonsense. The thing is, I genuinely think it comes down to the first goal. If they score after a minute, that's a chalk to my eyes. If we score after a minute, we've won it. Like, I know it sounds stupid, but I'm that confident. As soon as anybody scores, I'll stick fucking £300 on them to win it. Simple as.
And I guess just to sort of wrap us up on this weekend's, we had two pieces of great news on Sunday. Hibernian women went and pumped Forfar 5-0 to sort of continue their good form on the back of the Derby win. And hopefully that really kickstarts a strong end to the season. I think it's going to be difficult for them to, they're not going to challenge for the league or that, but hopefully they can sort of definitely get up to like closer to the sort of top three and finish the season strongly. Aye, and they had a much stronger squad out by all intents and purposes, but we were able to actually field a full bench this weekend. So hopefully we're starting to see the benefits of that. And that, like I say, that's what, 11 goals in two games, none, zero conceded. That can only be a good thing. Siobhan Hunter returned to injury, so hopefully all things are looking up on the women's side. And then we spoke about it last week, and we were all pretty defeatist in the thinking that Josh Doig was not going to win the Football Writers Young Player of the Year. But Harry rightfully won it.
Oh, definitely. If he played for another team, if he played for one of the old firm, he'd definitely have won it. He's a better player than Aaron Hickey. I think that obviously out of the four of us, like I love the boy and I think he's had a brilliant season, but I don't think his praise is quite as highly as you guys do. But no, I think that Jack Ross has used him perfectly. I don't think he's put too much pressure on him. I think he's thrived because of that. So no, definite sell, 100% his, 100%.
Greg, were you surprised to see that yesterday?
Very much so. Although I think Jack Ross did make a good point. He was younger than Turnbull.
Significantly.
Who have played pretty much every game this season for their respective clubs. So, you know, I think he does deserve it. It's surprising because he doesn't play for Celtic or Rangers, but we can't argue with how he's done this season.
Leon, just how important do you think it is that Hibs sort of hold on to Josh Doig? Obviously, there's definitely going to be interest in the summer, let's be honest. Any player at our level that plays as well as they do, that starts winning personal recognition. Do you think it's massive that we keep him in the summer, or do you think if he goes, it might just be too good that he might need to cash in?
Name your price.
I think Hibs need to structure the deal in a way that we still get the best out of the asset for as long as we can get it. So, you know, whatever deal, if he's going to go to an English Premier League club, for example, there's absolutely no point in him going now to play under 23 football down in England, because that will not help his development. So we need to structure the deal in a way that ensures that we get him back on loan for a season, maybe two seasons at his age, because he's not going to go straight into the Arsenal, Man City, Leicester, any of the squads he's been quoted. He's not going to straight into their team as good as he is. But also structure the deal in a way that financially we get the best out of the asset, because he's our player. I think potentially... let's not talk potentials. Scottish players have gone down south for too cheap in the past, and we as Scottish football have allowed to be walked over. He's the young player of the year, so he's the best young player in the country at this moment in time. I mean, the kind of money that we really should be commanding, demanding for him, for me, would be a record transfer fee. And I don't think that's ludicrous to suggest that, but 4.4 million we got for Scott Brown, I would want the deal structured in a way that sees that we ensure we get more than that for him, because I think he's potentially that good. And also, the transfer market's moved on in over 10 years. Do you know what I mean? We should be commanding higher fees in that time than we did. So, you know, wherever he goes, it's not going to be on the cheap. The deal will be structured in a way that we get the most out of him.
And I think all four of us have got complete confidence in the club at the moment in time. And again, on what we've spoke about enough, but what I've got Ron Gordon said at the AGM, we don't want to be known just as a selling club. Yeah, we understand where we are in the food chain, if you like, but anyone that leaves the club, it'll be on our terms, and it'll be, like Harry shouted out, we'll be naming our price, and if anyone wants to match it, then at that point they can go. And obviously, we don't want to hold players back either, and if players do move on, again, it's a selling point for us. John McGinn's went, and I'm sure there'll be one or two that go in the summer. It's just the reality of the beast. While we're speaking about personal awards and stuff, obviously that was the Football Writers not nominees. You've still got, was it the SFA or the SPFL awards that'll come out right at the end of the season. So obviously Jack Ross didn't get a manager of the year from the Writers, didn't even get a nomination. Do you think he'll be in with a shot on like the sort of SPFL, SFA one, because Steve Clark won't qualify for that one, I'm assuming, with the fact that he doesn't manage in the SPFL.
I cannot believe that Martindale got one.
That was a terrible take. Being honest, I don't think...
How is Elmore Fudd getting a nomination? What has he actually achieved this season? Yeah. Like, no, genuinely, are you telling me he's a better manager than Jack Ross? Really?
You tell us.
I know I've slagged him off all season, but... You can't argue with that. I don't think Martindale should be anywhere near that list, to be quite honest.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of conversation today around the Callum Davidson versus Steven Gerrard debate. Surely if we win the Scottish Cup and finish third, we've had a better season than St Johnstone. Yeah. And you could probably argue did, Rangers.
Did they not finish above us last season?
Yeah.
And did I? Yep.
There we go.
Callum Davidson seems to have become the media's kind of darling up here all of a sudden after, you know, don't get me wrong, winning the League Cup final with St Johnstone's a great achievement. Like winning any trophy with St Johnstone's a great achievement. That's not to belittle them as a club. I mean, they are, they're kind of small fry in terms of
anyone.
Yeah.
But you know, to do it consistently over the course of the season, as Jack Ross Hibbs' team have done, I think it's unfair not to have even got a nomination. But the decision's been made before the Cup final, so Callum Davidson could potentially win the double, but yeah, not win the award. Point. It's already given to Gerrard.
Aye. Harry, do you have your two pennies worth on this?
I just think some of the lower league managers deserve more credit. Like the boy that's managing Airdrie, the boy that's managing, like I don't like him at all, but John McGlynn at Raith, that's a ridiculous job that he's done. Comes straight up and then he's potentially getting promotion. As Liam said, it should definitely finish the season before you make these choices because there's so many different storylines that could still come out. Jack Ross definitely deserves it more than Buddy Martin. Like Martindale went on Livy's highest winning streak ever, but before that, the highest winning streak was only like six or something, so who fucking cares? And then as we say, if Jack Ross wins a Scottish Cup, then he's had a, in my opinion, that's a more impressive season than Rangers have had. How much money have Rangers spent? How much money do Rangers spend on wages a week compared to Hibs?
Well, I think Rangers squad and budget is targeted to win the league. The same way that Hibs squad and budget is probably targeted to finish third, which we've all come on to. Obviously, it's not entirely wrapped up yet, but. And if you then caveat that with a cup win, then surely that knocks. We've effectively, if we finish third, we've effectively won our league. And then if we win a cup on top of that, like for me, that I mean, Rangers, unbelievable season. Great team, Scottish football. The likelihood they're going to go unbeaten and probably get 100 points. That we don't, as much as we fucking hate them, like you can't knock that.
Yeah,
and the thing is for me. This Rangers team, apart from the Celtic team that went unbeaten, this is the best team in Scotland in the past like 15 years. That Rangers team's insane. The fact they've not won a domestic cup, in my opinion, is an underachievement. Like, fair enough, I don't think you can ever criticise a team for going unbeaten. Like, fair enough, that's very impressive. But for me, it's a failure. The fact that they've not won a single trophy under Gerrard, apart from the league, that's a failure.
I guess the way they've been beaten in the cups as well, the two games that they've been beaten, is. You know, that I think against St Mirren, certainly they played a weakened team. So if they got the strength and depth, because their first 11 is unbelievable, but what have they got other than that?
And see another thing. See Steven Gerrard, he could have won the league with Liverpool. He slipped. Bitch. Fuck Steven Gerrard.
The loser.
Oh, well, Liam, you've not really, do you have anything to add to that about, would you say that again, this is caveat and that we win a cup and that we do finish third, but surely on paper that beats St Johnstone fifth in a League Cup and Gerrard. Hey, Martin, like, Jack Ross might get manager here. That's saying there's still a sort of full section of awards to come out.
I think if he wins a cup and finishes third, I think for me it would be a clear choice given where he's taken us from being, you know, 11th place when he took over last season. Let's not forget to. Third and winning the cup is an astonishing turnaround. So I think that's context people keep on forgetting because we are a big club in Scotland. Yeah. But let's be honest, we've no finished third in 15, 16 years. So you know, we've no divine right to think we should be sitting third. So we'll won that on merit and potentially a cup. And only the second time in, 119 years we've won the Scottish Cup. So, you know, I just don't think as a... I don't think we're ever going to get that vote over an unbeaten Rangers team or a St Johnstone manager. But from Hibs' perspective, yes, Jack Ross should be manager if he achieves those two things.
It's like you want to say we're a victim of our own success, but we have been distinctively shite for the best part of 20 years, so we can't have been a victim of our own success. So, a victim of our size, shall we say. But
just to carry that on, even if you look at the season we didn't win the Scottish Cup, ultimately that season was a failure because we didn't achieve our primary objective.
Yeah.
He's achieved it with a small squad as well. Like the size of squad that Steven Gerrard has had to compete on all those fronts, it's a big squad, but you know, our squad going at the beginning of the season is very lean, and we've seen at times we've not even been able to name a full complement of substitutes. I mean, remember how down to bare bones were during the League Cup. We had four players called up for international duty and we had nobody. So he's done it with a really, really, you know, he's been backed. He's been backed and he's been allowed to bring in players. But the size of the squad has been nothing like a Rangers or a Celtic or even an Aberdeen, really, to be honest.
Aye, because their players are shite and didn't get called up to international duty, so... Now, to be fair, Aberdeen didn't even have to play in the League Cup group stages. That's the thing, like, we had to, because obviously they had had Europe, and I've just realised, we don't have to play in the League Cup group stages next season.
Man, I don't know how they work out, but if anyone thinks that Cove Rangers is anywhere near Edinburgh, they need a heat check, because that is ridiculous. Maybe teams from teams from your area. Why are you going three quarters of the way up the country?
It's the west. It's like it's supposed to be north and south, but it is more east and west, I think. But that's just clicked on me, because even if we lose our next three games and have a catastrophic end to the season, finish fourth and don't win the cup, we'll still be in Europe, so that means no League Cup group stages. Praise the fucking Lord. That means we're only about two games. It means we're only about two games we have the next season already. Here we go. back to league business on Wednesday night. We have I feel like it's a bit of an unknown. You want to say it's a tough look, it'll be a tough game. You're coming off a high and stuff, but you're facing a bit of an unknown with this Aberdeen team, eh? Like, obviously they beat Livingston. I think, did they beat St Johnstone just before the split as well? But I think that was before Glass came in, and then they've got pumped off that Dundee United team. Like, Harry, what do you expect on Wednesday night?
And see, the thing is, I think Aberdeen are absolute pish. I think the games they've won even after the split, they've been terrible. I think they're a terrible team. I think we're substantially better than them. That's the reason that we're finishing third and we're in the Scottish Cup final and they're not. I think that they've got a massive rebuilding job to do over the summer. I don't think Stephen Glass is a man to do it. So there's no reason why we should go up there with any fear. Because the thing is, St Johnstone came and they sat in at Easter Road. We made one mistake and they capitalised on it. But Aberdeen haven't got the capabilities of sitting in like St Johnstone do. St Johnstone... they only discovered it, and if they discovered it before December, they'd probably be sitting near, like, much closer to us than they are. So they're just a very good defensive side. Aberdeen aren't; they're not good at attacking either. That Canberry's an absolute donkey. Can't even mind, is it Hendry or something? He's a child. Get him off the pitch. They're all just a bunch of clowns. There's no reason why we shouldn't be going up there expecting to. If we, it's another game, if we take the lead, I don't see us not winning. Simple as.
Yeah, I think we're a very good front-running team this season, aren't we? I mean, there's very few occasions where we've been paid back to... I can't even remember a game where we've lost from being in front. I think draws, definitely, but I don't think we've chucked 3 points, which, obviously, you don't want to lose any games when you're in front, but I totally agree with you, Harry. Liam, do you think a point would be enough to wrap up third? Obviously, that would mean we were 3 points clear before, and that would be a massive turnaround in goal difference and stuff.
I think Angadiria point probably will be enough, but the last thing I want is us to go up there and try and play for a point. I know that's absolutely another cliche, isn't it? But you do want to go, and I think it's sometimes easier in a lot of respects when you've got to go and win the game, because you know how you've got to set up and play. One thing I would just like to just to talk about just really briefly, you will all remember the carnage at the beginning of the season when Ron Gordon appeared on Hibs TV and talked about signing Ross McCrory. And that deal didn't follow through for it. Obviously, fell through for whatever reason. They end up in Aberdeen. Just penny for his thoughts. He's been playing it right back. When he has played.
Great decision from him.
Mm-hmm. I just think sometimes.
Well done, mm-hmm. Well done, Ross. Good job.
I just think sometimes, I don't know. I suspect he's gone up there for the money, because I think Aberdeen.
Was there not chat around us not wanting to do the? I know we ended up doing that sort of deal with Jamie Murphy, but was there not chat around Hibs just point blank refusing to do the initial loan that they done?
So Rangers basically wanted us to not play him against them. I mean,
but you know what's more fun? Blaming it on Ross McCrory. So let's go back to that.
Yeah. They gave us a good title for the pod that week after we beat them. What's the score, Ross McCrory?
Just as a centre midfielder signing for Aberdeen as well. Like, you watch the ball go flying over your head every 2 minutes, and I don't think it's a place to go and develop for young guys in that position. But anyway, he's been played it right back. It's not really worked out for him. But I mean, there's a nice bit of narrative that game on Wednesday, isn't there, with him playing and a certain Mr. Florian Canberry playing as well for Aberdeen.
I just wish
for Aberdeen, I heard ever since his first trip to the country. that the atmosphere just gripped him.
Be fair, his first trip to Pittodrie would have been that day just over 2 years ago when Mr. McLaren missed the penalty, and I seem to recall Greg and Harry getting quite mouthy with the fucking Aberdeen young team on the fence, like just because they had a fence in their way.
Nice to relive your youth, isn't it?
that was one of my favourite away days. I thought it was a class day. I think I've been to Aberdeen 5 times and I've not seen Hibs score.
it would have been even all the narratives would, let's be honest, it would have been nicer if we were going up there with a six-point cushion, but I think we've got to be confident that we'll go and get the job done. Greg, do you think we'll see many changes on Wednesday night, or do you think any potential changes might be held back to potentially the weekend's game?
I think any changes will be enforced changes. I think you might have seen Neil miss out. He limped off at full time. Not overly concerned, but I think players like that maybe need a wee rest. You know, bring him in against Celtic and build momentum from there. But I don't think we need to risk boys tomorrow. On Wednesday, sorry. I mean, they're 3 points behind us. I think we're something like, I don't even know how many goals in front, but
nine.
So they need to win and then beat Rangers by...
On the assumption that they need to beat us and then better our result against Celtic. And then if we won and they won, they'd need to have a 9-goal, need to pump Rangers with 10-0.
I can't see them beating Rangers or getting anything at Ibrox, to be honest. They're notorious for not doing it anyway, so...
I would agree with that. I'm not worried. See, if I'm in all honesty, I think we're going to finish the season 3 wins.
I would take that right now. I'd probably give you a couple of limbs for that right now, to be honest.
I don't want to get ahead of myself or get too confident, but I'm pretty relaxed about the end of the season.
I no longer think we're going to win any games for the rest of the season, because every time Ewan's confident or quietly confident, everything just gets chucked at the window.
That's not true. That is not true. But I think in terms of what you're saying, Greg, that Harry, the three players obviously went off with Knox, and I think Kevin Nisbet, Knock, rest. But say Nisbet, Newell, and Ryan Poitras, would you maybe think the three players that came on for them would be the ones that come in? Obviously, we've got Gogic back available as well.
Yeah, no, I think we look very comfortable at the end of the game. I don't think that Murphy would probably last the full game. And I don't know how Hallberg would play alongside Gogic. It's kind of the whole dilemma I had with Newell and Irvin playing together. But they've kind of proven me wrong at times, so I'd happily be proven wrong again. But yeah, no. And then Dre Wright, as we said, I don't think he was terrible against St Johnston. But it's just, yeah, I wouldn't change the team to squeeze him in, to be fair.
So would you be looking
I'd bring McGregor back in for Poitras and let him Canberra about.
I think McGregor for Poitras will definitely happen. I think Poitras will get a rest. And I think Joe Newell's a dead set not to play. Liam, would you go with a Gogic coming straight in for Joe Newell and then just having Hallberg and Irvin, or would you look to change it about? Like, what would you sort of look for in that midfield three?
I think we'll probably see Hallberg drop out as well, and I think Gogic and McGuinness will both come in. I think you'll want to rotate the squad a little bit. Just with it's only 3 games in the kind of space of 11 days, but it's still enough games, I think, to let him do that. I also think we might see Paul McGinn rested as well. I think he might bring David Gray in. I don't know, I've just got a feeling he's going to make sweeping changes. If not for this game, he'll make a lot of changes for the game at the weekend against Celtic. I think we will see a number of bodies come in. I think that's the right thing to do as well if things are sewn up by that point.
The only thing I would say to that, though, is Jack Ross has a tendency, even if we're playing games every couple of days, he doesn't seem to rotate the team much. I know it's the killer end of the season now, but...
Even in the league, like we touched on earlier, even when we had a shorter squad in the League Cup group stages, we're still fairly strong with what we had available. I think it's important as well over the next 2 games now. Obviously, it's important to get done and make sure that you finish third. Let's call a spade, it'd be extremely disappointing if we didn't finish third. And it could happen, but I don't imagine it will. But I think it's important that we get minutes into players that we might rely on in the final. I think it's important that Darren McGregor plays at least 90 minutes over the two league games. I think it's important that Kyle McGuinness gets minutes. I think it's important that Gogic gets his hand back in. I know he only missed a week, but Halberg and that, and just keeping players fresh and ticking over. And then you look at that and you start to think, well, in centre mid, just the way Halberg played, you've got five to choose for in centre midfield across the next two games. Like, you've got plenty of options there. And again, I wouldn't be surprised to see David Gray come in, but I think that would probably mean a change of shape. But then that could coincide with maybe resting Nisbet. He might go sort of 4-2-3-1. Who knows? What's your score predictions? It is a bit of a hard one to call. Obviously, we don't know. Like you say, we might make a lot of changes. It'll be quite a tough one to probably predict until we see the team lines on both sides. But Greg, what if you were pushed for a score line just now? What would you go for?
0-0. Where? And I would absolutely take it.
One each.
Harry?
No Hibs.
Three. I'm going to go for 1-0 Hibs. I think we'll just get the job done and then that way. And then I think we'll make quite a few changes going into the Celtic games. Harry, who's your goal scorer?
Well, Doyle's getting all four.
All four,
that's
2-0 win.
Aye. Good, mate. I have to say it. I mean, actually, Speech just mentioned Doyle against Aberdeen. I know he's a game that everyone always remembers for Christian Doidge at Pataudry, the first one that he played there. But we're talking about the best goal that he's finished for Hibs potentially being at the weekend. The very last goal that we scored with in front of fans away to Aberdeen last year that put us 1-0 up before Whittaker got sent off, he rounded Joe Lewis and put it in for basically the fucking byline. That was an unbelievable finish. But so we'll bring it back for the first time in a little while. High B of the week. It's a positive. It's been a good weekend. High B of the week. I'm going to go for Martin Boyle for styling out.
Can I go next? Melka Hallberg. Fucking I even tweeted about him at full time. That's how good I felt about him.
Just before they interrupted me there, just because he was so keen to get that in before Liam got in, as Liam's pen got launched off his laptop screen, I'm going to go for Martin Boyle because he managed to style out a really, really fucking bad knee slide at the first goal. I have to say, like, I know we've spoken about the content and stuff that comes out of Hibs, but the Lewis Forfar pitch side stuff I think is really, really good. And I think I've seen it on Twitter as well. I can't remember who tweeted it, but I was like, he's managed to pick up an Australian, an Englishman, a Scottishman and a Welshman all say come on in four completely different accents in the space of about 2 seconds. It was fucking class. But Liam, seen as your lookalike, your doppelganger and your Ballon d'Or winner has been taken, who gets your nomination?
I'm going to go for lookalike to soundalike, then I'm going to go for Mr. Jack Ross for winning a big game. As is so often labelled against him, that he doesn't win big games. Well, he fulfilled that. Jack Ross.
And Harry, you can see us out in this section, and then it's all yours after that as well, my friend.
Well, being honest, I'm not going to win it this week, but I don't care. I'm going to say it because my high be the week, and that's all that matters. Mine goes to Paul Hanlon because I think he was absolutely superb. I think he deserved the captain's armband, and I really hope he gets to lift the Scottish Cup with
him. It's interesting that none of us have went for either of the goal scorers, which I think shows just how good a team performance it was at the weekend and just how comfortable we were. And I fully agree that I would love to see Paul Hanlon lift the Scottish Cup as his captain. Would he? Him and David Gray would stay together or what? Who knows? But we'll cross that bridge when it comes. Harry, like I say, it's your time of the week, my man.
All right, Bill. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Harry's High B Quiz. If you don't know what the quiz is, you should listen to another podcast because I can't be bothered explaining it. So let's get fired straight into it. It's up to you if you want to go for long form or short form answers. We'll just kind of deal with it as it comes. But anyway, I woke up yesterday, Sunday, and I felt just happy. I remembered Hibs 1, and you know when you just get that feeling inside, it's just a bit buzzy. You just feel dead happy. It's the first time I've felt it, I think, since we went behind closed doors. Excluding the Scottish Cup win in 2016, what is the happiest you've ever woke up the next day after a Hibs game, in which the Hibs game just be like, oh, we won that one?
Ooh, see, this is a tough one because any really big games, you normally wake up with a fucking raging hangover, which sort of ruins it.
This is probably a wee bit out there, but I would say that when the over the two legs in, against the Greek team.
That was
I didn't really give us a hope in hell because 2-0 down in the first leg and we managed to win it. So over the two games, I woke up after the second leg like, wow, we actually came through that all right.
Do you know, I'm going to go for the Derby replay the season after we won the Scottish Cup when we beat them 3-1 at home. Probably for, I absolutely battered them that night. Could have been a lot more. And I think at that point, that's when you started to believe that we might have actually won the Cup again. And I think if we got put out by Hearts at that point, you maybe would have just been a little bit underwhelmed with the sort of defence and stuff. But I thought we were really, really good that night. And going into watching the next day with Springy, our step was fantastic.
I'm going to say the Daryl Horgan derby for personal reasons. So I turned 30 on the very day of the Daryl Horgan derby.
Figure out what age he is now.
Yeah, I know that will shock some of the listeners that I'm not older than 32. But no, we were away from a 30th and it was 90% Hibs fans and a couple of Hearts fans that were there. And do you know what? Just with the sour the whole weekend if we hadn't won that derby. It was a great day turning 30 up there, but also to wake up on a fallen day and just have the relief of knowing that you'd won the derby was special.
I wish I could say I woke up feeling good the next day. I did not.
Yeah, me neither.
I'll answer that question as well because I've got one stuck in my head. The day after, it was my first ever Spliffcover when we won 3-2 away at Ibrox.
Can you please explain what a Slivcover is for the
So
listeners?
A Slivcover is when you get absolutely steaming it. You're not intentionally harming yourself and getting drunk because Vicente Slivka's had an absolute day for himself. And he scored the world's greatest volley of all time that day. And we beat Rangers 3-2. And I woke up and my head was splitting and I could not stop smiling. It was the weirdest hangover I've ever had. But I thought three of you gave very good answers there. So he's each got a point. He's got a point and a point, so he's all on to going at the second question. We're going for Harry this week. Pardon?
What I liked about that game at Ibrox was the fact that he was giving Graham Dorans a lot of shit in the first half, squaring up to him, and then he stuck it through his legs in the second half.
Do you know what? I watched it. I was, do you know when you have to, I was in Magaluf, and do you know when you have to check out on your room, but you didn't get picked up till like, say, later on that day. So I'm like, we've already checked out the room at this point. So I'm like lying on a sun lounger, but like in clays, no jeans or that, but like no swim shorts and that. Try to watch on like the fucking dodgiest stream going, oh, and just see the amount of looks I got when Slivka popped it in at 3-2. Like, oh, it was bad, but well, well worth it.
All right, well, going to question number two. We've got 2-2-2 on the board. So we're playing against Aberdeen this week, obviously. And we've got a couple of players, I think it's fair to say, have kind of went downhill since going there. We've got Dal McGeer, Ross McCrory, Cam Berry. Which player, aside from those three, has made the biggest mistake either not joining Hibs or leaving Hibs in the first place?
Oh, that's a good one. It would have been a lot easier to say which player got really shite when they signed for Hibs. biggest... From a player's point of view, from where they've regressed, not like where we've went, fuck, we wanted him, like when they've got shite without coming to us.
Yeah.
I don't know what he's gone and do since, but one player who didn't win anything with Hibs, who I really would like to have seen lifted the Scottish Cup in 2016, was Dominique Malonga. I know his career's not gone to create things now, furiously looking at his Wikipedia page to see what he's done since Hibs, but I think it's fair to say he was a kind of cult hero at the time he was at the club. He was that sort of like lovable rogue, and I would just love to have seen his post-match interview. I don't care about Zinedine.
I don't care about the pitch. I'm going to go from a similar time period at the club as Liam, and again a player that I think every Hibs fan loved at the time, Jason Cummins. And he might argue that he's had a really good career since then. He's played for Rangers, which he's not been quiet about. He's scored goals for Nottingham Forest against Newcastle, scored two goals against Liverpool, who were had champions everything at the time, but he's back in the Championship now. You know what I mean? Like, and he left us in 2017. Like, 4 years later, he's playing in a Championship playoff semi-final. Like, he has regressed, you know what I mean? And he's probably made plenty of money, but Championship, semi, he won the championship when he left us. He's now in a championship playoff semi-final, and I think he could have done a lot better for himself than what he has. Don't get me wrong, great player for Hibs, and probably could still go on to have a good career, but since he left Hibs, he's proofs in the pudding. He's back where he started.
Notable mentions for players like Scott Robertson. I actually liked him at Hibs, and then he went to Romania or something like that, and fell off the face of the earth. McGeoch going to Sunderland, big mistake. James Keatons as well, thought he was more than adequate to play for us in the top flight. Ben Williams, thought he was a good goalie. Probably didn't want to play in the championship though. There are a few.
I've got a few that I want to mention actually, but I'll let Greg actually answer first.
No, carry on. I've not actually got one.
I think when you look at Fraser Fyvie, I quite like Fraser Fyvie, and he obviously just was a bit hesitant on signing the deal. I think he wanted some confirmation around game time and that, and then when he finally wanted to, Lennon tell him to fuck off, he ended up at Dundee United, got a really bad injury, and now he's at Cove, and by all accounts, I think I've listened to him on a podcast and said it's sort of his choice that he's up there. He's obviously got business and that's where he's from and that, so I don't think he's that arsed, but he could have been playing Scottish Premiership football, and then within a year he was in League 2 with Cove. And then another one, I was actually talking about this with my mum the other day on Friday night when the cup final was on, Anthony Stokes. He must only be 33 or something. He can't be that old, I don't think, and since he left us on his third spell, just off the face of the earth, like, entirely. Again, probably off the field issues are more than documented, but yeah. There would be two other shouts for me.
Ian Murray as well. I think he didn't really do much at Rangers. That totally detrimented his career. He went down to Norwich and then came back up and he just wasn't the same.
Greg, I'm going to push you for an answer here because we've been on this question for about 10 minutes. I've got one question.
I'll go with Derek Riordan because he was just sitting on the bench every week for Celtic, and what a wasted talent that is. The boy's the most natural finisher I've ever seen in my life, and he was sitting on the bench at Celtic every week. It's just a waste, isn't it?
He's well versed in that question. You seem to answer it quite well. So again, each he's no bonus points this time, but he's got a point each. So we're going into question three. We're sitting at 3-3-3. So obviously taking on Aberdeen this week, but for some reason Aberdeen's flooded. We can't play them at any sport. What are we taking Aberdeen on in order to finish above them instead? So you can take them on in any competition, just not a sporting competition.
Accents.
I'd say Britain's Next Top Model because we're one fucking handsome fit.
That was my other answer.
Solid content.
That's a tough one, isn't it? farming for obvious reasons. We would look after the animals. They maybe wouldn't look after the animals. They would be herding sheep. They would, we'll leave that one there.
They'd help them breed, eh?
Yeah, this is funny.
Because Long Bangers just mentioned our week there. I think it was a million Short Bangers. They were talking about Rebecca Luce and the incident, the infamous farming incident where she did actually bother a farm animal. So I think Aberdeen fans might potentially be taking inspiration from Rebecca Luce on Channel 5. But,
All right, well, you came what you both came, you, the three years sorry came out with absolute rash. this has been one of the best. We've had boys. We're sitting at 5-5-5 going into question four. What is
we
going
got
on?
Bonus points there, and all.
Aye, bonus points are all. The three years made me laugh. All right, so obviously the semi final yesterday, brilliant. Personally, it's the game I most wish I was there this season. So you've got nearly a full season to decide from. Apart from that game at the weekend, which game do you most wish you could have been at?
I'm going to be a bit controversial here, and it didn't end up well. They're never enjoyable experiences, but probably the Derby game against Hearts at Hampden, and I think if fans were there, we'd pump them. I hate Derbies, but everything that goes around it is enjoyable. Hampden, and if you're not letting us pick the weekend's game, then I would take that one. Maybe
got a couple to be fair. Hamilton away in December, never a good place to go, but if you win 4-0, it's Barry. in Celtic when after they came back for Dubai, and we scored in the last minute. The amount of patter and content you would have for the 90 minutes would be unrivaled. So I will say they too.
You've left me with absolutely nothing to pick from. I'd like to have gone to watch us get beat 2-0 at home by Livy so I could shout loads of abuse at the team for
normal
and get really angry and get really wound up about it, because sometimes you need to just go and let some steam off at a defeat. And I'm going for that answer because I've been left with nothing else.
Well, I'm disappointed because you're on the verge of losing a point here, because we had a last minute winner against St Johnston. We pumped Livy away. We had that game against Dundee United away. That would have been tense. That would have been fun as hell. Imagine the panic stations if we were at Hamilton at home. We would have ended up booing them after we won 3-2.
3-0 up.
Livy is the worst away day in the league. Controversial or not, Livy is the worst away day in the league currently. I can't get excited about beating St Johnston 1-0 in the 93rd minute. Stevie Malatelli. Well, maybe I could if I was there, to be fair.
Hey, we went top of the league.
Fueled up.
We went top of the league.
So we did. All right, well, a bit of revisionism there for me. In hindsight, I'm maybe.
Do you know, I'm going to be honest and say this is the one season where every single away day would have been class. Right, let's be honest. And
because they're
the
winning.
Numbers, can you imagine them, like, we'd probably had to get extra allocation for Aberdeen for the morning night. Or Wednesday night, sorry. And I would put an honourable mention to the 3-0 win at Motherwell, because we always take big numbers through at Motherwell.
Good away day.
We take big numbers away. We were in a good run of form, I believe, at the time. I think that was the week before Hamilton, so maybe not.
Yeah,
like, so the Hamilton one on the back of that would have been, like Greg said, really good as well.
To be honest, I will also say Celtic at home, because I've missed us chucking leads. To be honest, you do miss it. It's just so Hibs, and you just feel close to them when they do stuff like that, and also gives you a good chance to fucking moan, eh?
All right, well, this is controversial, but Ewan picked a defeat, Greg picked a draw, and Liam pretty much refused to pick. So neither of you...
I also said Hamilton away 4-0.
Aye, but then you have to pick one in this quiz. You didn't get to pick two answers.
Well,
that seems to be Greg's new tactic. He just goes with multiple answers until he finds one that you like. Honourable mention to the list of 15 names.
Honourable mention to of the 36 games we've played.
Would have
a list of 30 things I think Harry likes about Hibs. So we're doing a wee birthday shout out. It's Big Bex's birthday today, so happy birthday to her. That's my lovely sister. But anyway, she was originally going to go to Fort Park today, but didn't end up going because the weather forecast was supposed to be crap. It ended up being a nice day, but oh well. So if there was a Hibs themed either water park or theme park, what would it be called, and what would the best like ride be?
Paul Heckenbottom on the Big Dipper. That's exactly what the form done when it under him. It just dipped, just fell off the edge of a cliff.
I would just like to.
It was unbelievable for weeks, and it just became shit.
I think that just the most obvious thing to say here is that life with Hibs is just a fucking mad roller coaster of emotions. That just get this cliches and life is a roller coaster.
just
gotta ride it. But I think, do you know what, right? Why not just build it at HTC? Call it HTC. All the players go on about it. It's in the fucking contract. You've got to have it said in your first three sentences after signing. Hibernian training centre, just add it. Just fucking extend it out into the farm. And just that's all it is. And they just say, oh, great conditions, tick. Great stadium, tick. City, tick. Oh, theme park, tick.
Well, what's the big ride going to be?
Darren McGregor. Yeah, a big ride.
Just piggybacks on a way.
Yes.
I've got an answer. That's bought me a bit of time. So I think it would be back to an year that we'd all rather forget. So I'm going to take you back to the year 2013, and Mr. Terry Butcher arrives at Hibernian, and the theme park is called Terry Butcher's House of Horrors, and it's literally just having to rewatch old performances of Hibs games under Terry Butcher and watching parade signings like Danny Haynes and Duncan Watmore and the boy Boateng we signed from Arsenal. And then you get to the end of it and then they make you watch the penalty shootout against Hamilton. And then you get past that and you think it's all over, but then you get through to this thing at the very end and it's just Terry Butcher letting each of the players know individually before he gets sacked that he doesn't want them there next season and just lets them all go, and then that's the end of the ride. Terry Butcher tries it orders.
I love him.
Oh, see what's annoying with these stupid questions? They always get the best answers and it always makes it the toughest to decide. You can't walk just because of how snappy it was and how quick he was to get there. I'm going to have to give it to Greg because he was just straight in there. And plus, imagine walking into a theme park called Paul Heckenbottom. I just think that's fucking hilarious. so well done, Greg. First IB quiz in a while, but Greg's clinched it today.
That 2 weeks in a row?
I thought I was in for a good one there as well, but hey, that's how unfortunate. Well, that is all from, I want to say, from the Scottish Cup finalists. We are not there, but hey, fuck it. I will be emailing the SFA to see if we can get a press pass. but it won't happen, but you never know. But yeah, thanks very much for listening. I think we're going to record probably on Thursday night after the Aberdeen game and get that out before the Celtic game. So we'll be back on Thursday, but thanks a lot for listening. Cheers.
Thank you.
Cheers.